And welcome to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I am Mary Cummings Jordan, sitting in for Cherry Gregg today. She's got the day off. So nice to be here, Avi.
So nice to have you here. Thank you for doing this, Mary.
I love this show, and it's just a pleasure to be here for Cherry.
And we
today.
Love you, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. It's just a love fest starting us off today. So let's get down to business, shall we?
We shall.
In just a few minutes, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro about the I-95 collapse and the rebuilding efforts. And Avi, we're also going to hear from a researcher about the risks of taking weight loss drugs like Ozempic and the big picture, the larger problem of diet culture.
And we want to hear from you about your experience with weight loss, or maybe you've struggled to get medication because of the surging demand for Ozempic and Wegovy. Give us a call. Get on the line right now. 888-477-9499 is the number. You can also email studio2 at whyy.org. All right, let's round up some news now, Mary.
Okay.
We're going to start with pools, because yesterday was a big pool day in Philadelphia. They started on a rolling basis to open the outdoor public pools in Philadelphia. But there was a very interesting story in the Inky about indoor pools, which don't get as much attention. There used to be 12 public indoor pools in Philadelphia as recently as 20 years ago. That number is now down to one in the entire city. And if you think about it, we're in a climate where there's way more indoor pool months than outdoor pool months.
Yeah.
And one of the things that this article was pointing out is that this does this creates sort of a pipeline issue for the outdoor pools, because they need to train lifeguards to open the outdoor pools every season. But it's hard to do that if there are no indoor public pools available to teach kids how to swim, to make them strong swimmers, to make them eligible to become lifeguards. And of course, more broadly, when kids don't know how to swim, there are other issues that come along with that. So I just thought it was an interesting story and something we really just don't talk about very often.
Well, you know, the fact is most of the closed pools that you spoke of, Avi, are in black and brown neighborhoods.
Yep.
Generations there have not learned how to swim. And according to the CDC, black children are 5.5 times more likely to drown. And in the big picture, too, with an indoor pool, you're swimming year-round. It's often, you know, obviously where kids learn how to swim, but there's also the opportunity there to often join a swim team,
yes,
to bond with other kids,
community,
to learn the skill.
Yeah.
And in the even bigger picture, this is also possibly a pipeline to diversify the sport at a higher level.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly, which
yeah.
has been an issue for a long, long time in the world of swimming. So, Mary, you want to take us down to Center City now for our next story, that's right?
Yeah, update on the Starbucks incident. A lot of us will remember from about, 5 years ago. Two black men were sitting in the Starbucks on Spruce Street. Police were called because they were sitting in the shop without buying anything. They didn't want to leave. The regional manager ended up being fired, as well as a manager who oversaw the Philadelphia Starbucks district, both of them white people. The regional manager then files a lawsuit, Avi.
Yeah, and I don't know if we even caught that in real time, but that lawsuit came to at least a temporary conclusion yesterday with a jury awarding that regional manager $25.6 million, $600,000 in compensatory damages,
yeah,
$25 million in punitive damages. That is for that manager, regional manager Shannon Phillips. Kind of an eye-popping number, and something that brought this case back up to the surface that was, it was in the center of attention for a long time here.
Huge story in Philly, yeah. The lawsuit, again, it argued it was discriminatory,
yeah,
that Starbucks declined to punish the black supervisor of the Spruce Street store, but took actions against the white manager and another white Philadelphia district manager. All sorts of different kind of angles to this story.
Absolutely.
Worth exploring.
And we'll see if there's an appeal. You know, Cherry's not in today, but we were talking a little bit about this offline. And Cherry used to be a lawyer, and was sort of like, when she saw that the compensatory damages were just $600,000 and the majority of the damages were punitive, she kind of thought that maybe that won't stand up on appeal. So we shall see. We'll keep our eye on it.
Discuss it down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And finally, I want to talk a little bit about baby names in the state of New Jersey, your home state, Mary
Yes,
Cummings,
I've been there
Jordan.
For many decades.
Many decades.
My state, indeed. Doesn't seem to be very much change for the top, 4 or 5 for boys.
Yeah, so not a lot of creativity in the boy naming section of New Jersey. So apparently, since 1910, this is according to data compiled by NJ.com, there have only been four boy names that have at any point been the top boy name in New Jersey.
Which were?
Michael.
Okay.
That's actually more recent. Mm-hmm. John, Robert, and now it's Liam. Liam is the number one boy's name in New Jersey. Are there just Liams crawling all over your neighborhood, Mary? I don't know.
Not in my neighborhood, but it is a pretty popular name. But Avi.
Yeah.
Bruce never made the top 10, as far as we know.
It's a good point.
Jersey.
That's a good point. What's going on there, Jersey?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look into it.
And by the way, one of this is an interesting contrast, and I actually don't think that this is exclusive to New Jersey. I think this is the case all over the country. But there's far more variety in popular girls' names in New Jersey. So there have been 17 different baby girl names in the last 113 years that have at some point been in the top spot. I think you've got the list of what's number one right now.
I do. Olivia. And I do have an Olivia, a very nice young lady of about 10 years of age
Olivia's
in my neighborhood.
One?
She's just lovely, yes.
What else is on there yet?
Sophia, Mia, Emma. Now, are we noticing a pattern here? There's a melody. There's a melody.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
And not only with the top four, but in the top 10, 9 out of the 10, Olivia, Sophia, Mia, Emma, Ava, Amelia, Isabella, Luna, and Leah, or Leia.
So that's
Charlotte's the only outlier.
That's a Mary Cummings Jordan fact right there.
It's an observation. I don't know what's going on in Jersey either.
So I have an infant daughter. I'm not going to say her name on air. It does end in an A.
Okay.
And
it's a thing.
Yeah, now I feel
right
a little bit like I... I'm a little too predictable.
Well, and her name is not. It's beautiful. We won't go there, but it's beautiful.
Thank you so much, by the way. Well, okay. I showed you pictures, so I bribed you, essentially.
Yes.
And then for the boys, we've got Liam, Noah. What is that?
What's Lucas.
Lucas, Joseph.
And Joseph.
Okay.
Joseph. Yeah.
Well, folks in New Jersey, if you're naming your boys, let's start to mix it up because we've got some patterns to break.
We don't need an explanation in New Jersey. It just happens. It's very organic.
We want to transition to talk a little bit about I-95, and we are waiting for the governor to call. The governor is supposed to be with us momentarily, Governor Josh Shapiro. But lots of developments. Things have been changing quickly in this I-95 situation. As most of you, I'm sure, know, I-95 collapsed on Sunday, early Sunday morning, because of a fire that started with a tanker truck. And they are now demolishing a section of I-95 near Cottman Avenue and rebuilding it. And so joining
quickly,
us to talk
they're,
about...
They're rebuilding quickly.
Quickly.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about timeline right now with the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro. Governor Shapiro, thank you for joining us on Studio 2.
Good to be with you, Avi. Thanks for having me.
So let's start here with the plan. It's a temporary backfill plan that allows you to reopen some part of this roadway while you work on the permanent replacement for that collapsed bridge. Can you tell us what the other options in play were and why you ultimately did not go with those other options?
Yeah, and let me answer your question, if I can, just by kind of taking a half step back to set the stage for how we got to that decision, if I may.
Sure.
Look, obviously, my administration is leading a coordinated effort to reopen I-95 safely and as quickly as possible. And I must say, from the first moments after this devastating collapse, we've not only been on the scene, but we've been coordinating at all levels of government, city, state, federal. Everybody's been great, from the mayor in the city and his team to President Biden and Secretary Buttigieg. The federal government is providing all the resources we need and Philly needs to get this done. Now, how are we going about rebuilding this safely and quickly? Number one, I issued a disaster proclamation to expedite the rebuilding. That allows us to cut through red tape, cut through the BS, draw down all of the possible resources we have, both state and federal. So we took care of that. The second thing we did was immediately begin a 24/7 operation of demolishing the southbound side of I-95, which was structurally compromised, and then removing the piece of the northbound side. That's the side that everybody saw fall in. Folks told us that was going to take a week or more. I'm pleased to be able to report that we are going to have that done today. That'll be about 4 days after we started. Now, while all this was going on, our engineers at PennDOT, under the great leadership of Secretary Mike Carroll, our PennDOT secretary, have been working on various options to rebuild that roadway. Now, this, Avi, gets to the answer to your question,
okay,
right? We want to do this safely obviously, that's priority number one. And priority number two is quickly, because we realize we got to get this road reopened. And in effect, what we're going to do is fill in the ground underneath the area that that will be removed on 95, the collapsed, fill it in with a specially made recycled glass product that's actually made in Delco. Mm-hmm. And that will, in effect, build the ground up to road level, which will allow us to pave over that and get traffic moving. That will allow us to have six lanes of traffic, three north, three south, moving at all times. Once that is complete, then we can go about putting the permanent bridge structure in without interruption to traffic, because we'll be able to keep six lanes of traffic moving at all time when we build that bridge, and then remove that recycled fill underneath and reopen Cottman Avenue. So we took this approach because we thought it was the speediest and the safest approach. And I got to say, it's awesome to see the team do this work. The Philadelphia Building Trades, which are doing this work, pledged to work 24/7 to get this job done. And we're really excited and grateful for their hard work.
And Governor, on the topic of speed, still no timeline for completion here, no estimate for how long this will take. And if so, why can't the government commit to a timeline or at least a rough estimate?
Look, this is all hands on deck. And as I just told you, we are literally working 24/7 to get this done for the good people of Philadelphia and Pennsylvania. And I hope you know this about me, Avi. I am competitive as hell. Mm-hmm. And I want this to be an example of not only the ingenuity, but the grittiness, the toughness, the capability of all the folks here in Philly who are getting this done, all the people across this state. We are going to get this done as quickly as possible. Now, we want folks to be able to see this progress we're making in real time. So we set up a live stream, which I said we'd have up in a few days. We got it up first thing this morning. Anybody can go check it out. Just go to our website that we set up for this, pa.gov/I-95updates. You can literally see during your program. I want people to watch the live stream and listen to your program at the same time.
Yeah, do both, folks.
There are three beams left to be removed. During your program, at least one, if not two, of those beams are going to be removed. Folks will be able to see this progress. They'll be able to see the wall being built, the temporary wall, the fill going in. So they'll be able to monitor the progress as time goes on. I can assure you we are all hands on deck to get this done as soon as possible.
And I'm with you 100% there. But, Governor, I still want to know why no commitment to a timeline, because I'm sure there are business owners out there that would love to have at least a rough estimate for when they can start to route trucks down this path again. I mean, what is the hesitance there?
There's no hesitance, Avi. What there is an all-hands-on-deck effort to get this done as soon as possible. I said on Sunday when I was out at the scene that it would likely take some number of months. But given the work that's being done, given the speed that people are working at, I'm hopeful it'll be quicker. Let me give you a concrete example of that to back up these words. We assumed, based on what the experts told us, it would be a week or more for demolition. We're done in 4 days. So we are moving as quickly as possible. Obviously, safety is our top concern. And I'm going to keep you all updated on our progress as we go forward and as a more definitive timeline emerges. But everybody can watch the progress, and I'll continue to be available to answer questions and be accessible to the public to monitor our progress.
One more question for you, Governor, before we let you go. We want to first be respectful to the truck driver, Nathan Moody, who lost his life in this crash. Our sympathies are with his family. He was driving a truck for a company based in New Jersey called TK Transport, Inc. Does the state have a plan to investigate this company, and are there any jurisdictional issues here because they are based in Pensauken?
Well, look, PSP, Pennsylvania State Police investigation, NTSB's investigation, they're in their early stages. Colonel Paris of the state police and the leadership at NTSB, I'm sure, will have more to say in the future. I'm focused on the rebuild right now. I'm focused on making sure we get that done safely and effectively and continue to keep all hands on deck. And as soon as that investigation wraps, we'll report that to the public and we'll take whatever necessary steps that emerge based on the facts of that investigation.
That is Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania. Governor Shapiro, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we are talking about weight loss drugs. It is a craze right now in this country. We're going to get answers from an expert.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Cherry Gregg today.
So, Mary, you, I am sure, like all of us, have seen tons of news about the off-label use of diabetes drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. Celebrities tout these drugs as a miracle weight loss cures. Mm-hmm. You might even know someone taking them right now. And in fact, demand has spiked so much that we've had supply shortages. People with diabetes who really need these medications sometimes are having a hard time finding
them. Tough story. A lot of people struggle with their weight, Avi. I mean, there wouldn't be a $76 billion diet industry if weight loss were easy. Talking about it can be tricky because for so many people, pant size or the number on the scale gets all wrapped up in self-confidence. And even though we've made some progress in our conversations about body acceptance, we're seeing lots of differently figured models,
yeah,
if that's the way to put it, on, you know, a magazine, Sports Illustrated, you know, all sorts of different places. It still seems like the quest for thinness never entirely goes away.
Absolutely. That's baked in deep. So if these medications and new ones, by the way, coming down the pike, are as game-changing as people say, what does this mean for how we think about health and body image? Is there a better way? So in the studio with us right now is Jenna Trinneri, who has done research on these new drugs. She's also the director of clinical services at Penn's Center for Weight and Eating Disorders. Jenna, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me.
And by the way, we want to hear from folks in the audience. Do you struggle with your weight? Have you considered taking medication to control it? Are you worried about our culture's obsession with body size? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email us, studio2@whyy.org. Wanted to start basic, Jenna. Ozempic, Wegovy, this class of drugs. How do they cause weight loss? What's the biological mechanism here?
Yeah, so you can think about these medications are in a class of drugs called GLP-1 or glucagon-like peptide 1 agonists. That is essentially a hormone produced by your gut that is part of the signaling system for hunger and fullness. Mm. And so it has some action there in the stomach as well as on the effects of your insulin release in the pancreas, which is where it improves diabetes, it improves blood sugar control, as well as we actually think of it also as a neuropeptide in the brain, and is a there are receptor sites for that in brain areas that have to do with appetite as well as reward, which is also potentially part of how these medications work to reduce eating and food intake.
So can I try to be maybe overly basic here? It's a little thing in your stomach telling your brain, hey, it's time to eat or I'm hungry, and it's sort of blocking that communication a little bit?
You got it. It's actually one of the it's kind of the reverse. It's a signal that says, like,
okay,
hey, the food is here. We've got enough food now. and so we're good. We can release some insulin and deal with that food, and we don't need to eat more at this time.
Interesting. Yeah.
So as far as weight loss is concerned, Jenna, Ozempic and Wegovy are prescribed off-label, right?
No. Okay. Actually, if you think about the generic name for this medication is semaglutide, it has an approved FDA use for the treatment of diabetes. That's where it's being marketed as Ozempic. And it has an FDA approved use as of about 2 summers ago for the treatment of weight loss. And that's where it's being marketed as Wegovy. They're the same medication at different doses, but that is an on-label use.
But on the off-label question that Mary was raising, there are some doctors who are prescribing this off-label. I mean, can you give us a sense of, first of all, if that's happening and to what extent it's happening?
I don't know the exact numbers, but when you're talking about the use for weight loss, there are specific criteria that someone would have to have for it to be considered on-label use. And for better or worse, the way the FDA tends to prescribe these medications is based on BMI or body mass index. So typically these weight loss medications, and semaglutide is one of them, are only indicated for people with a body mass index above 30 or above 27 with a weight-related comorbid health condition, a health condition that's likely related or improved by body weight.
Are there potential side effects?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I mean, when you talk about any medication, you're going to need to consider the health conditions of the patient. And there are some health conditions where you would not prescribe these medications at all. In terms of typical side effects, the most common that you're going to see with these medicines are gastrointestinal side effects. It's a GI hormone. Your gut is adjusting to having more of it than it's used to. And so the number one side effect is going to be nausea, experienced by about 44% of people taking the medication, compared to 17% of people taking placebo. So we always in our clinical trials have people reporting on both sides.
These medications cause some somewhat rapid weight loss, correct?
It tends to be quicker, or certainly is going to be more rapid and larger than we would see with placebo, because that's how it gets the indication for weight loss. And yes, these medications are going to produce larger weight losses, quicker weight losses than we would see as typical for someone doing what we call lifestyle modification or making changes on their own to their diet and physical activity.
I wanted to bring in a caller. Nikki is on the line. Nikki says, not been able to get diabetes medication. So Nikki, can you explain what's going on in your case? And if you have a question, go ahead and ask it here on Studio 2.
Okay, I just have a comment. I just recently got put on Ozempic for my diabetes, and so then they were starting to get it for the weight loss. And I have to put my prescription in like a few weeks ahead before I run out, because it's on back order so much from the weight loss people.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And first of all, we're sorry to hear that. Jenna, so that's Nikki. Nikki is saying that there's an issue getting Ozempic. Nikki is on Ozempic and not able to, is having issues accessing the drug in a timely manner. And perhaps the cause here is that people are using Ozempic for other purposes for weight loss. Give us a sense of how acute this problem is. Do we really have our arms around this?
Yeah, I know that that has come up now a couple of times over the past year, where there have been nationwide shortages, really from the manufacturer of this medication. And my research studies have been affected as well. There are delays even there.
Interesting.
And so we do see a much bigger uptake of this medication by physicians for even on-label use, right? For weight loss is an approved use than we've seen with other weight loss-related medications in the past. And I think that it may have exceeded expectations in some ways, or just the speed at which they can produce the drug isn't great enough to keep up with that demand.
Do you see prescriptions for people who might not fit the BMI profile?
We're trying to lose weight? Yeah, in the population that I work with, I am typically working with people who would meet the criteria that we are looking for. I certainly have heard about, as you guys referred to, on social media and things like that. I know that people are saying that they have accessed the medication for much smaller weight losses than it would be intended for.
I want to bring in another caller. And by the way, if you want to join the conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. We are speaking with Jenna Trinari about Wegovy and Ozempic and these, what many people are calling, miracle weight loss cures that have come online recently and become far more popular. Colleen is on the line right now in Studio 2. Colleen, what is your comment?
Hi. I have been fortunate to be able to use Ozempic not only to lose weight, but to bring myself back from pre-diabetes and the brink of being diabetic, and also brought down my cholesterol by 15 points after and lost 36 pounds. I get frustrated by the coverage of this, because I feel like the real issue is not, it feels like the pharmaceutical industry is pitting people who struggle with weight loss against diabetics. And really, Wegovy and Ozempic are the same medication, but Wegovy is much more expensive and much harder to get insurance coverage for than it is to get Ozempic coverage. And if that issue was equalized, we would not see the kind of push towards Ozempic. Many people in my weight loss support group through the Jefferson Medical Management Program are not getting coverage for it and having to buy Ozempic from Canada and elsewhere. And the irony is that they would cover my stroke, they would cover eye disease, they would cover an amputation if I was diabetic, but they won't cover the things that might prevent me from becoming, seriously ill. And at 60, it's a lot harder to lose weight and manage these things. I have a very healthy diet, and yeah. my doctor told me I would have yeah. long ago been diabetic had I not had the healthy diet that I came to this process with. So it's more complicated than just calories in, calories out, and it's not really a yeah. diabetic against heavy people.
Well, like, can we expand on, first of all, thank you, Colleen. You were nodding a lot there, Jenna. There's a lot of issues raised in Colleen's comment, but one of them is perhaps that we're focusing on the wrong aspect of the story by focusing on maybe the celebs who are using this, or this idea that maybe some people aren't using it for the right purpose, when indeed this has the potential to help a lot of people. So take any part of that you want, Jenna. Let's run with it.
Yeah, I thank you, Colleen, for picking up one of my favorite soapboxes on the insurance coverage issue, which I'll get back to. But just in terms of the representation, I think of this as when we're talking about weight loss, we, and myself as a provider, I am not doing that or recommending that to patients for cosmetic reasons. I am recommending that to patients as a way of knocking out usually multiple health conditions at once through one route rather than treating each of those conditions separately.
Because so, weight loss can often help with diabetes, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. As well as Colleen was saying, with cholesterol, with many things.
Joint
sleep
pain.
Apnea, pain. You yeah. know, there are just so many mobility issues. Yeah. I mean, just so many ways that at higher levels of weight, it can start to interfere with someone's life and health. And that's really what we're trying to address when this medication is prescribed for body weight. It's not being recommended by practitioners like myself as a means of improving aesthetics.
It's not a vanity thing for many people, yeah.
Yeah, and many of the patients, like Colleen was describing, that are seeking this medication have encountered real problems in their life that they are trying to address through weight loss, which is, as she said, incredibly difficult to do by lifestyle modification.
Can we get to the insurance side of this, too? Mm-hmm. Because the what's covered and what's not covered, first of all, is very confusing, so can you help us understand that? But also, perhaps how it reflects the way we treat and consider obesity as a chronic health issue in this country.
Yeah, it took a long time for obesity to even be recognized as a medical condition. It is now thought of that way, but there is still quite a lag on the idea of providing treatments for weight loss per se. Yeah. It's considered preventative care and often considered optional, whereas many conditions, in fact, can be prevented or improved through that route. And so when you are seeing, for the majority of individuals, insurance would cover diabetes medications, they would cover even bariatric surgery as medically indicated, but often do not provide any coverage for these medications for the purpose of weight loss, despite the fact that they might be used to treat health conditions through weight loss.
This reminder for our listeners, if you want to chime in, ask any questions, just give us a call at 888-477-9499 or email us, studio2@whyy.org. So Jenna, what needs to change to make certain that people who need to access these drugs and cannot access these medications get access?
I mean, I would love if there was a bigger coverage on the insurance side for multiple options for weight loss and lifestyle change improvement, not just the medications, although that certainly is among the options you would ideally want people to be able to access, but even programs like the ones we have at the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders, patients are paying out of pocket there too, and those are also costly out of pocket. People are going to commercial programs, those are costly out of pocket. And so just any coverage to help people that are often really trying huge amounts of effort towards trying to improve their health.
What is your reaction when you see these medications touted on social media and other outlets, you know, as being miracle weight loss drugs?
I mean, I think there's certainly a part of that where the excitement around these medications is in part due to the fact that they produce larger average weight losses than anything we've seen recently. And that really is revolutionary in the sense of some of the patients I see when they describe taking this are like, wow, you know, I've not felt this before when I've tried to lose weight and tried to lose weight. Now it's like, huh, you know, I can just pass up that, you know, extra serving. I feel full. I never felt full before. I mean, it does revolutionize for many patients the experience of trying weight loss.
Because
in that sense, it's correct.
Yeah, so often it's not just about just put the fork down.
Absolutely.
You know,
not.
It's a bigger struggle than many of us realize.
Yeah, there are real biological mechanisms that are contributing to how easy or difficult it is for someone to maintain a lower body weight. And that's in part what we can learn from the fact that these medications work so well.
So that actually leads me into the mental health side of this, which is expansive and tangled and really hard to sort through. So on the one hand, you have people who struggle with weight, the relationship with food. This can be a way to free them, to reset their mental state. On the other hand, I have read folks who are concerned that we're reinforcing this societal message that being overweight is bad. It's some sort of moral failing. So when you look at the large-scale mental health side of this trend and the effects it could have, what stands out to you?
Yeah, I think that it is very important to be intentional about how you're talking about weight loss. It is a sensitive topic. Every person thinks about their weight to some degree.
Yeah.
And many people, almost, regardless of your actual body size, have thought of themselves as needing to lose weight. And that is just not the case for medical reasons, quality of life reasons, etc. For actually many more people than think that they should lose weight, or even they have been told by a doctor that their BMI is not in the correct range. You can be healthy and have a higher BMI. But what we're seeing here is for people that really could benefit from weight loss, now we have something to offer where it could feasibly make what has been a longer-term struggle much easier for them. But still, we certainly want to carefully address individuals that struggle more with the disordered eating symptoms.
If you stop taking these drugs, the weight comes back on, right?
On average, there's going to be gradual regain when you stop taking a weight loss medication. They are intended to be prescribed like a blood pressure medicine to both reduce, in this case, weight, and then to keep it there. You don't take your blood pressure medicine one time and expect it to stay low. It is the way that these are intended to be prescribed. And what we don't know yet on the research side is if we can make modifications to that in terms of dosage or frequency to be reduced over time, because that just hasn't been evaluated yet. And we don't know what percentage of patients, because there certainly are some, are fully able to maintain the weight loss with behavioral means alone. So again, the average, yes, is regain. Do I recommend to patients that they would stay on them? Yes.
Long-term studies?
And long-term studies are absolutely more indicated. We have studies of several years of these medications, but obviously there's a beyond several years that we'd like to know about in terms of the
safety
and long-term use.
And on the efficacy side for long-term use, I have read that there's some concern that people will only stay on these types of drugs for 1 or 2 years, and then for whatever reason, I don't think we even really know why, they ditch it. And is that concerning to you? Is there something in that you're seeing that's setting off alarm bells, or do you think it's just a matter of figuring out what that sort of off-ramp is and addressing it?
Yeah, one of the things that my study is looking at actually is what happens to people's appetite when people discontinue the medication, because we really do want to understand more about that process. Is it kind of a gradual rebound? Do people kind of feel like my routine's good and it's actually still better than it used to be? Or is there this big spike in hunger, et cetera, that feels aversive to patients? And we just don't know that yet. I think that many people do, for better or worse, still think about a weight loss effort as something they do for a concrete period of time,
right?
And then they stop doing and return to quote-unquote normal life. And when I'm treating patients, regardless of the method, that's not the message we want to give. We want to make this something that you feel that you're going to be able to sustain in the long term, because without that, you will, regardless of method, see weight regain over time.
If weight is an issue for you and you feel comfortable sharing your story, 888-477-9499 is the number to call for Studio 2, or you can email us at studio2@whyy.org. So, Jenna Trinary, at what point does a person go to the doctor if it's a weight issue, not diabetes, but they're saying, well, maybe I need to lose some weight and this is something that I should pursue?
Yeah, I mean, usually what we think about, or what I think about with patients is what are you trying to address through weight loss? If you lose weight, what would you hope to see improve? And if your answer is, exclusively my body image and how I feel about my body, weight loss might not be the best treatment, because we can improve, there are treatments to improve body image independent of changing your weight. But if someone's saying, now my weight's interfering with my ability to, you know, get down on the rug and play with my kids, or I'm starting to see that my cholesterol levels, my blood pressure levels are elevated, and I think that weight loss would be something that could help me improve these things, that's where I would see it as indicated for the person, regardless of their current body.
And that speaks to when you were talking about having a higher BMI and still being healthy, if you don't have, you know, blood pressure issues or cholesterol mm-hmm. issues, and maybe you're just doing okay.
Yeah.
But still so hard to kind of get around some of the cultural images that we see to become happy with ourselves. How do you coach somebody?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are ways that we can learn to better appreciate our bodies, regardless of their size, in thinking about what they do for us and in thinking about where some of those messages came from, and actually sort of questioning, you know what, where did I learn that having a smaller body was better?
Mm. I love our listeners, because sometimes they really center us and remind us we should be addressing the basics sometimes. Here's a comment from Christy who asks, because this is the underlying, this is the foundation of this entire conversation. Why is it so hard to lose weight? And Christy says, specifically, as we age. I mean,
it is harder.
I often think, you know, we don't even ask that question. I mean, because that's why the medication in some ways is becoming so popular. So can you address that, Jenna?
Yeah, I think about it as largely environmental is the way I would think about it. If you look historically, right, many more people struggle with weight now than 50 years ago, certainly than 100 years ago. We haven't changed in genetics over that time.
Right.
We haven't changed in our biology or our wiring over that time. But boy, has the environment changed.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these highly processed, high-calorie foods. They're available everywhere. The portion sizes have gone up dramatically with which things are served. Most of our jobs don't really involve moving from a chair at this point. I mean, there are just a number of contributing factors that make it such that someone has to be pretty intentional if they have a wiring that says, hey, you know, when food's available, as most people do, I would like to eat that food.
Yeah.
And so it then becomes effortful. And to sustain that effort with all of the things that a person is typically dealing with day to day is actually very difficult to do in a way that's going to produce long-term weight control.
What's next? Because, look, these drugs are very popular. They're making a lot of money for the first movers in this space. So I'm assuming the pharmaceutical companies are not stupid. They're going to continue to develop drugs in this vein, and they're mm-hmm. probably going to try to develop better and better drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a sense of what we can expect over the next 5, 10, 15 years in this space.
Yeah, if you're talking about the weight loss medication space, we are the research side is now thinking about more ways to access directly that hormone signaling system that we've known was there for a long time, but could not treat directly because essentially of the sustainability of those hormones when produced synthetically. If someone ingests them, that's why most of these initially were injectables, they don't last very long and it doesn't have a very big effect. So now that we're able, or they've formulated ways to address those directly, we're seeing combination medications. And the first of those is tirzepatide, that's currently right now only indicated for diabetes, but is expected to get FDA approval for the treatment of weight loss within the next year. And that's the first combination drug on the market where it's one of these GLP-1 agonist, but it also affects a different hormone called GIP.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we're going to keep our eyes on this space, and we may be calling you again, Jenna Trinary.
Sure.
That is Jenna Trinary, Director of Clinical Services at the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the University of Pennsylvania. She's done research on these new drugs we've been talking about today. Jenna, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for the conversation.
And can I thank you for your time, Mary Cummings Jordan? I really appreciated you hopping in today, and it's always a pleasure working with you.
Oh, it's been so great, Avi. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
So we're going to cap off the week next, like we always do, with a little bit of trivia. Stay tuned for that. You are listening to Studio 2.
Hi. Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Howdy, folks. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. You are listening to Studio 2, and it's Thursday, which means it's Trivia Thursday for us here at Studio 2. I am joined on the line by this week's contestant, Anne. They are joining us right now from Ridley Township via phone. Anne, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
So, Anne, today's question is transportation-based. I am curious, do you have a favorite way to travel? You a train person, a car person, a plane person?
I'm a car person, unfortunately.
Really?
I wish I were more environmental, but yes, I'm a car person.
Well, if you're a car person, then this is a question for you, okay? And so this is the way this works. Ask a question. There's four options. You get it right, you get some swag, some Studio 2 swag. So those are the stakes. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. America's interstate highway system is officially called the blank National System of Interstate and Defense Highways. Whose name goes in that blank? Is it A, Richard M. Nixon, B, Dwight D. Eisenhower, C, Douglas MacArthur, or D, Jack Kerouac? You got the joke.
I want to say D, but I'm going to guess that's Eisenhower. B?
Let's play a clip to reveal whether or not you are correct.
The interstate highway system was completed in 1975, creating over 35,000 miles of roadway. And in 1990, Congress renamed it the Eisenhower Interstate System.
You got it, Anne. It is indeed Dwight D. Eisenhower. Do you know why it's Eisenhower?
I do not. I was worried that it was going to be Nixon when they said 75.
it was kind of misleading. That was a zigzag, wasn't it? So Eisenhower was a backer of the highway system and signed the Federal Aid Highway Act into law in 1956, which sort of birthed the modern American interstate highway system. But that was somewhere in the back of your brain, Anne.
Awesome. Yeah, very cool.
Well, we appreciate you playing and coming on the show. We're going to get you that swag. Wish you a happy driving, happy weekend, and thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So I mentioned the weekend there just a moment ago. We are getting ready for the weekend, of course. And as usual, WHYY's Tanya Pendleton has a great list of things to do, starting with Juneteenth.
Slavery is an irrevocable part of the Black experience in America. But so are joy and celebration. Now a federal holiday, Juneteenth combines them all, commemorating the day that slaves in Galveston, Texas learned they were free. Philadelphia is hosting multiple Juneteenth celebrations, including at the African American Museum and at Cherry Street Pier. But the biggest is in West Philadelphia. They've been hosting the Juneteenth Parade and Festival since 2016. It's happening on Sunday, starting at noon, with a parade that begins on 52nd Street, heading to Malcolm X Park. Performances by Fat Man Scoop, DJ Cupid, and Little Mo are scheduled along with the all-day fest. We'll have more info on Juneteenth celebrations in the area on our website, whyy.org/things to do.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Pride Month continues with more events for the LGBT+ community. Saturday's Pride Teenth in Germantown's Lovett Park is a smoke-free event geared to Black families. It gets started at noon. Saturday's Family Pride Day at Franklin Institute includes demonstrations combining science with drag, sounds interesting, and an introduction to voguing and ballroom. And Doylestown holds its fourth annual Pride Festival with music, movie screenings, and a block party. Get started on Saturday and goes through the 25th.
Dollars,
they're hard to come by these days, so you have to spend wisely. Fortunately, there are things you can still buy with a dollar. Baltimore Avenue's Dollar Stroll comes with retail and restaurant discounts. It's on Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. and it goes from 40th to 51st Streets. Music, movies, and comedy are the center of the Dollar Fest at the Philadelphia Mausoleum of Contemporary Art. It's on Saturday starting at noon, and the admission price is, well, you guessed it, $1. Happy Blooms Day to you. If you know what that is, then you're familiar with Ulysses, the masterful novel by James Joyce that is actually set on June 16th.
Mr. Leopold Bloom ate with relish the inner organs of beasts and fowls. He liked thick giblet soup, nutty gizzards, a stuffed roast heart, liver slices fried with crust crumbs, fried hen cods roes. Most of all, he liked grilled mutton kidneys, which gave to his palate a fine tang of faintly scented urine.
In an annual event, Ulysses is read over a full day at the Rosenbach, echoing similar celebrations around the world. The readings begin at 11 a.m., and some prominent Philadelphians will each take a turn, including politicians, actors, academics, and our own Peter Crimmins. Admission to the Rosenbach is free that day, and you can stop by at any time before the reading concludes at 8. Sunday is Father's Day, so let's give a round of applause to all the great dads in the world. If yours is one of them, why not give the old man a gift he'll really appreciate?
She's gone, I better learn how to play. She's gone.
The Yacht Rock Review is in town. They'll be bringing their complete musical commitment to the soft rock of the 60s, 70s, and 80s to the Fillmore on Friday. The show starts at 9 p.m. And this is the one time it's okay to wear a yacht cap if you don't own a yacht. Stevie Nicks, she's one of the most iconic female singer-songwriters of her generation, both as a member of Fleetwood Mac and as a solo artist. She's making a stop in Philly with another singer-songwriter who is also an icon. His name is Billy Joel.
Such a waste of time. If that's what it's all about, mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
The two powerhouses are bringing their combined talents to Lincoln Financial Field on Friday night. The show starts at 7. We're moving out to start our weekend, and we suggest you do the same. But we'll be right back next Thursday with a new set of options. We invite you to our website, whyy.org/things to do, for more details on what you've heard and even more, including a comedic take on Hamlet in New Jersey and where you can find blues icon Keb Moe in Delaware. Whatever you choose to do, have a great weekend, everyone. Billy Joel, take it away.
Only the good die young.
Always tough to follow up Billy Joel. We are also moving on out for the end of this week here at Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Before we go, just want to make a quick aside. We often talk about rating and reviewing the Studio 2 podcast, and you're probably thinking, I don't listen on the podcast, I don't care. But I'm still going to make a plea to you to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcast app. It's not because I like Apple Podcast app, folks. I couldn't care less about the application. But the more people that rate and review our podcast, it signal boosts it through an algorithm so more people discover the show. We are beholden to this thing. We have no control over it. So if you like the show, if you wouldn't mind adding one more thing to your things to do this weekend, going on over to the Apple app and rating and reviewing the show. Our show, by the way, is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. WHYY Audio General Manager is Joan Isabella. Al Banks is our engineer. One more big thank you to Mary Cummings Jordan for filling in today as my co-host. If you want more of our show, head on over to whyy.org/studio2. Or one more time, download us wherever you get your podcasts. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Have a great weekend, everybody.